Hey there, welcome into the Bandwagon Sports Podcast, back for another episode 23, I believe.
I love the way you say hey there every time, like hey there.
Hi there.
Sorry, it's just so funny, like, are you talking to me? Hey there. No, hey anyway. There.
Well, I'm talking to everybody, Lisa.
I'm talking
to everybody. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Bandwagon. We've got a fun episode for you today. We'll talk to Chicago Cubs relief pitcher Spencer Patton, born in Urbana. And as we found out in talking to him, grew up in Tuscola. I didn't realize that about him. I knew he went to high school a little further south in Illinois, college at SIU Edwardsville. He's had kind of a long meandering road to the big leagues. It'll be nice to talk with Spencer about his season between AAA Des Moines and the major leagues with the Chicago Cubs. That's coming up. Mm-hmm. John Steinbacher has a fun rivalry for us this time, which we don't know what it is.
How do you know it's fun? Maybe it's like a miserable one.
It could be. Maybe it is a miserable
rivalry. It's fun only here the time. That's it.
And we're going to talk a little fantasy sports as well. Lisa's going to find out why the heck John and I play fantasy sports. I think is kind of the gist of this, what this conversation
will be.
So that's coming up as well. All coming up on this edition of the Bandwagon Plus. Social media nonsense, of course, so stay with us. And we're pleased to welcome a special guest to this edition of the Bandwagon. We're joined by Chicago Cubs relief pitcher Spencer Patton, born here in Urbana and now pitching for the Cubs here in this historic season for them. Spencer, thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. I guess I'll just start with a very kind of general question, but can you describe what it's been like to be part of this Cubs team that's won more games than it has in over 80 years?
It's been a blast. The atmosphere in the clubhouse and around the guys, it's been a team I really enjoyed to be a part of, and it's definitely one I'll never forget.
Hi, Spencer. This is Lisa. I have a question. I know that you have moved up and down and also laterally to get to where you are now, and I'm curious to know, how hard or easy has it been for you to find your role on this team, given that history?
It's definitely not easy. Definitely more on the hard side. Mm-hmm. You know, moving up and down, it's hard to find that role like you're asking, to get on a roll and to be comfortable in one place, because, you know, when you have options and you're a guy in my situation, you could be up and down all the time, and it's hard to get settled in. And then also, you know, it's hard on my family. You know, we're packing up all the time and moving to different cities and joining the team in different cities. So it's not easy. It's hard to get adjusted to, but it's part of the game, and it's just my role right now, and hopefully it pays off in the end.
Do you ever find yourself, or does your family find itself, not wanting to get too invested in a place because of the nature of the business that you're in?
Absolutely. You know, it's tough to settle in somewhere. Especially in cities that we like. Last year when we were with Texas organization, we really loved our spot in Round Rock, mm-hmm. and we just liked the area. But it was hard to, you know, get comfortable there because we knew that any moment we could be leaving. So, and same this year, Des Moines is actually such a cool little city, and there's a lot going on there, and we enjoyed our time there a lot. But like I said, it's hard to just get comfortable there and really get acclimated because it could change in a moment.
That's a good answer, Spencer, because Brian's from Iowa, and I was worried you were going to say something bad about it. But, yeah, I think that's really fascinating to us, you going back between Iowa and the big league team. Obviously, you know, being in AAA that's not like something easy to get to in and of itself. So it's just interesting, the dichotomy between that. So going between that and then going to Wrigley Field, which, you know, we're playing in front of 40,000 people who are, insane. How are the crowds in Iowa, actually, is a good question, because I know, obviously, there probably is a lot of enthusiasm there as well.
Des Moines actually draws pretty well. Not early in the season because it's cold, and not so much later in the season because school starts and everything. And it does get a little more chilly at the end of the season. But during the summer months, they draw really well. They're great fans. They're nice. They pay attention to the game, you know, and they really draw pretty well, and it's fun playing for that team.
Spencer, I'm curious, when you switch organizations like you did before this season, you went from the Rangers organization to the Cubs organization. When you came over, and the Cubs started working with you, the pitching coaches there in the organization, they obviously had seen you pitch. They kind of knew what your repertoire was. But did they have you kind of change your approach at all in how you attacked hitters or how you pitched or anything like that?
Not really. You know, obviously, when you get traded or a team picks you up, you know, they like what you have already. Mm-hmm. And so they don't try to change you too much. Maybe they try to adapt you into what their philosophies are as a team and not so much on an individual basis. So, but, I mean, there are things that come up during a season that, you know, maybe you struggle with something and they see something that they'll, you know, try to give you information and advice to work on, but they don't really try to change you a whole lot as far as who you are individually. Madden and Theo are really good about that. They really like to let guys be their own player. They believe that you got to this level doing something right. So let's roll with that. And if there's something that comes up or something that they think could help you, then they're gonna let you know.
This is Lisa again. I'm going to shift gears a little bit and just ask you, what was going on in Central Illinois when you were growing up here? Can you describe what, you were born here? How did you grow up here? Where did you go to school? What was it like? Do you miss it? Et cetera.
I was born in Urbana. Grew up in Tuscola, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
My whole family still lives in the area there. I don't remember a whole lot, but I still have a lot of friends in the area. I used to come back in the summer months when I moved away. Mm-hmm. I would come back and hang out with my friends, and my dad lived there, and me and my mom moved, and so I would always come back and see my dad, and I had a bunch of friends and family to hang out with. So it always felt like I was still a part of that community. And there's a friend of mine I had lunch with yesterday out here in Pittsburgh. He's from Tuscola, and he was telling me how Tuscola still claims me. So, so that's nice, and it's always nice to go back for family holidays and visit with people there. But, you know, I grew up an Illini fan, still am. I think it was just, typical Central Illinois upbringing, nothing crazy, just grew up in a small town.
Does it ever get weird for you when you talk, or did it ever and does it now ever get weird for you to come home? Do your friends treat you any differently? Is it as you were starting to pull away and develop a career in baseball, what was that like in terms of your relationships with people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they may have treated me differently or, played the 20 question game, for the first couple weeks when I came home, mm-hmm. but for the most part, it is kind of difficult to get jumped back into those relationships because, I'm kind of in the dark with how their lives are going. And when I come home, it's almost like I missed out on what's going on. You know, they all have their own agendas and their own gossip, or if you will, and I'm just kind of left out of the loop, and it's hard for me to get back into that and jump back into those relationships. But it's not that bad. I try to find time for my wife, and I both try to find time for friends that we don't get to see that much during the season. And mm-hmm. off season, we get to hang out with a bunch of people and get acclimated back to their lives, and just find out what's going on and how they're doing. But it is kind of a slow start at first when I come home in the off season.
Yeah, it's like being on tour with a rock band or something for 9 or 10 months
out
of the year.
Yeah, it's like, the thing is we, my lifestyle versus their lifestyle is totally different. So mm-hmm. it's like, it's hard to relate to with what they've got going on and what we've got going on. You know, they always ask about how our life is, and it's hard to explain because they may not always understand.
Right.
And sort of along a similar, first of all, a quick question, did you grow up a Cardinals fan then?
I did grow up a Cardinal.
Okay, all right. Well,
nobody's perfect.
um, from on sort of the same talking about, you know, how you end up in the Major League Ball Club. We, you know, from externally, we all hear how wonderful it is to work with Joe Maddon and how he treats the team. As someone who's obviously gone back and forth a couple times, what's it like to get back up there? You know, as you just talked about your friends, do you feel comfortable with the rest of the team? Do you feel like they have a bunch of inside jokes that you don't get because you haven't been there the whole time? Or is it just, I mean, I know you're all professionals, so there's probably a little bit of that's just the way things are.
Yeah. For the most part, this team has been, you know, really welcoming with anybody that's came in, you know, and joined the team late and hasn't been here all year. They're really good at welcoming guys, and I feel a part of this team every time I come back up and step foot in that locker room. So that's good. But there are, you know, some things that you miss out on, you know, whether it's, like you said, inside jokes or stuff that happens in the clubhouse or team dinners or team functions, you know. And so there's a little bit of, you know, what did I miss out on last time, you know. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, everybody's been real welcoming and made me feel like, you know, I've been a part of the team the whole year and haven't been left out. So that's been nice. That's been an easy transition every time I've been up and down.
We're talking with Cubs relief pitcher Spencer Patton here on the Bandwagon Sports Podcast. And Spencer, for a guy like you, you know, you pitched your college ball at SIU Edwardsville. You were not, you know, a real high-round draft pick. Just talk about kind of that journey for you through the minor leagues. And when did you first really think, you know what, I'm going to make it. I'm going to make the big leagues. When did that really first become a reality for you?
It probably didn't really become a thought until, let's see, like 2014, I'd say. See, I was in AAA with the Royals. And it just hit me one day when I was sitting there in the bullpen or something. I was like, man, I'm literally only one phone call away. And that moment kind of felt surreal to me. Like, I never thought I would be in this situation. You know, like, I'm literally one phone call away from getting to play in the big leagues like I've always wanted to. But it seemed like it took forever to get to that point, though. My first 2 years, I competed rookie ball. And like you said, I wasn't a high-round draft pick, and I was a fifth-year senior, so that made me older than most of the guys that I was playing with. And to repeat rookie ball made it seem like, okay, this is going to take me forever to get there. And that was in 2011, 2012. And then in 2013, I had a really good season and just kind of, you know, kept the ball rolling and something clicked. And I went from high A to triple A at the end of the season. And then, like I said, in 2014, and the bullpen realized that I was literally only one call away and, you know, one situation away from getting to accomplish my dreams. So,
yeah, and as you're going through that process, at some point did you, you know, in conversations with, you know, with your family, did you talk about, you know, if it doesn't work out by this particular time, then I might just have to hang them up and try something else?
Absolutely. My wife and I had many discussions, and you know, I'm very thankful for her because she's been a true rock for me, kind of telling me to stop acting like a baby and go after it. But no, I've definitely had those conversations. Like I said, repeating rookie ball 2 years in a row at the age of 24 and 25, you know, 23, 24, however old I was. I definitely had thoughts of, you know, this may not be what I should be doing. You know, I'm not making any money at all. I've got an apartment to pay for back home. I've got bills that I need to pay for, and this just isn't cutting it. So, you know, there were definitely thoughts of me, you know, hanging them up right then and there and going to find a regular job. But I always did tell my wife, and we did have a plan that if I wasn't in the big leagues by 30, you know, then that was it. You know, it's time to put that aside and find something new. So I'm thankful for her and for her support through those years in the minor leagues and the plans that we had together and stuck with them, and you know, it worked out that I didn't have to wait till 30.
She sounds awesome.
She's amazing.
Telling you to get after it and not be a baby. That's like that. That's that kind of support is really important. So she thumbs up to your wife. I want to go back a little bit to, well, and forward. We're going in two different directions at the same time here.
All right.
So, of course, over the weekend, we heard the news about Jose Fernandez, the pitcher for the Marlins, passing away. And, of course, there's been a slew of press about him, almost all of it incredibly positive and praising not just his ability but his personality. I ran across an article on Slate a couple of days ago where I found this interesting, and this is a quote from the author. Veterans lecturing rookies on how to behave is as much a part of baseball's folkways as players scratching their crotches, if you'll forgive me. Sorry. The article goes on to detail how baseball demographics are changing and how that is changing that the way the game has been played, and that Jose Fernandez was one of those players that brought new joy to the game, or a different type of joy to the game, both on display and just how he played. Do you have any comments there? And I think the thing in the piece that struck me was Goose Gossage, Hall of Fame pitcher, of course, just has had some negative things to say about this, like exuberance and joy coming to the game. I mean, have you been lectured by a veteran as a young player about what to do and what not to do and how to play baseball? Or would you ever lecture anybody if you were in that position?
You know, there's kind of two sides to that, I think. You know, the game is changing a little bit, and I've seen it a little bit from 2011 till now.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, I came up, and I was fortunate enough to come up in the minor leagues under some guys that had already been in the big leagues and were still, you know, trying to get back there, and, you know, what you would call veteran guys. And so they kind of taught me how to act and how to, you know, conduct myself on the field and what you should do and shouldn't do, you know, in the big leagues, or, you know, what you can expect and how to conduct yourself. And so I was fortunate enough to play with those guys because I had, and those guys teaching me, you know, sometimes the hard way, really gave me, really allowed me to have a lot of respect for those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you look at those guys, you're like, wow, those guys have been there. They've done it. I haven't been there yet, and this is what they're telling me to do. You know, I was thankful that they were able to, you know, willing to pass along the information to me so I could, you know, prepare myself and ways to conduct myself on the field and so forth. But, you know, I think that you look at a player like Jose Fernandez, that guy played, and you heard it all over SportsCenter and ESPN and everywhere else, that he played like a child, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that joy that a child has to play the game. He had that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think, you know, sometimes we get so, as players, we get so lost in the game and what we're actually playing the game for, and what we set out to play the game for when we were kids, you know, and we get so lost in big money contracts and endorsement deals and TV contracts and all this, that we forget the real reason we started playing in the first place, and that was to have fun. And Jose had that.
Mm-hmm.
And you could just tell every time he was on the field, and even in the dugout, he had that that aura about him, you know, that he was still going to play the game because he loved it so much. You know, some guys, I've seen it, and it's hard not to get wrapped up in it. You see guys that, you know, they just get so, I guess, so ingrained in the business side of this game that, you know, their personality changes. And so I think there's a way that you can conduct yourself on the field, though, you know, in a professional manner, like veteran guys have done in the past. You know, I see young kids, younger guys coming up in the big leagues and they're acting, you know, crazy on the field, you know, guys hitting home runs and guys in the dugout acting like they've never seen a home run hit before, you know, and it's crazy how that's going on. You know, I was always told coming up to act like you've been there before, you know, kind of that mentality, you know, don't show anybody up. Something happens on the field that's outstanding, obviously you're going to be excited, but don't do anything, you know, that, you know, it's like a circus out there. You know, be professional about it. You know, have your moments. Pick and choose your moments when you're going to show emotion. And, you know, the game will dictate that. So you don't have to facilitate that on your own. So I think there's two sides to that. I think the joy of playing as like a child is definitely something that can help your game if that's what you need. And then also, you know, you need to conduct yourself in a professional manner and act like you've been there before.
Cubs relief pitcher Spencer Patton, born in Urbana, grew up in Tuscola, and pleased to have him join us today on the Bandwagon Sportscast, Sports Podcast. Spencer, thanks a lot for your time. We'll see what happens you know, with the playoff roster and everything else, but regardless, best of luck the rest of the way, and thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you.
Yeah, good
thanks
luck.
Thanks so much. Good luck.
Thank you, guys.
All right, great to talk with Chicago Cubs relief pitcher Spencer Patton. Thanks for him spending some time with us here today. Now on to a different topic, fantasy sports.
Right, and I just want to say that I really liked his last answer there about how the game is played now. I thought it was interesting. He can't have been expecting that question.
No, I don't think so.
So that was well done. Well done, sir. Yes, so I have some questions, you guys, about fantasy sports.
Hopefully we have answers.
So I did a tiny bit of research before coming in on fantasy sports. I've never played. I have known about fantasy sports probably since the 80s or the 90s, maybe. Just becoming more aware of people that I knew playing, including my brother Mark, who, you know, he would play occasionally and poorly, he probably would tell you. So I know that they really got started like an immediate post-World War II, and then fantasy baseball kind of rose to more prominence around 1980, 81, when there was a baseball strike and there wasn't really anything else to write about. So it was being written about more by journalists. And that it's a $2 billion industry right now. And I guess I don't understand how pretend games can be a $2 billion industry. And we'll get to that in a second. Mm-hmm. But I guess I just want to know more about, like, what your ideas of fantasy sports are. Can any sport be a fantasy sport? Why do people play them? Is it betting? Discuss.
There are a lot of reasons. I have only done a couple of leagues over the years for money. That's not it for me. I know for a lot of people, they do play for money. It's
but like
essentially,
what? Like winning games? Like that's how you make money,
right?
Is by winning games?
Okay. Yeah. Everybody has in those leagues. Everybody has an entry fee. And then if you win the league, you get a big payout.
Okay.
Maybe second place,
so
smaller
like a pool.
Payout. Yeah, kind of like a pool.
You can get really, like in the leagues I play, if you win the most points for a particular week, you get points. If you have the best regular season record, you get points. If you win the loser's bracket, you get money, I guess is what I mean to say.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of ways of shaking it out.
Yeah, and I think where it really took off was when the internet really took off in the 90s, is when mm-hmm. fantasy sports really started to take off more. That's when I started playing. This will take me back a little bit. The first time I did a fantasy baseball league, and that's the first fantasy league I was in, it was just a bunch of my college friends and me that thought it would be fun. And I had to keep track of stuff myself. I had to kind of organize rosters, and there was a program online that would help me calculate points, but I had to keep track of a lot of it myself. This was like in 1998, where it was just starting to become more and more prevalent.
I played fantasy sports in like sixth grade, and the guy would bring us stacks of stuff printed out on a dot matrix printer.
Yeah, so you hit it long before I did.
He sort of did all the figuring of stuff. He's now a billionaire, so.
A billionaire?
Yes.
Wow. You played fantasy sports with a billionaire?
Yes.
A future billionaire.
I'm not going to name names. Though,
well.
But I assure you it is true.
Wow.
Well, maybe not a billion. Yeah, I think a billion.
Wow.
Intense. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to
get my search engine foo going here.
I just meant to say that back in the day, there was just, you know.
Yeah, if you did it before the internet, it was hardcore. Like, you know, like John said, keeping track of all this stuff yourself, stats and everything.
Okay, anyway. So walk me through. You've decided that you want to play fantasy baseball. We'll just use the baseball example since we're heading into the playoffs. So then what?
You have a draft. You get together and you have a draft.
ESPN has apps and stuff like that. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
that's how it's done now.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So whether
you have an app and basically you decide when you want to have your draft and whether you want to have it like a live draft where everybody's there and you're eating good food and all that kind of stuff. Or you can just do it where the draft happens at X time and you pre-rank your players ahead of time, and the computer just basically drafts based on how you ranked your players.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of different ways to do it. But then, you know, basically you're picking players you think are going to put up the best statistics for that season. You know, the most home runs, most runs batted in, best batting
average.
So
you're like putting together a dream team of sorts.
Yeah, that's basically
what
it is.
Can other people put together dream teams using the same players that you're using?
No. Each player is drafted once.
Got it.
So
okay.
if you draft Chris Bryant of the Cubs, he is on your team and no one else can pick him.
All right. So given – is there always money involved?
No.
Okay, so you can play in fantasy leagues where no money's changing hands. You're just doing it for the love of the game.
And then nobody cares.
And nobody cares, right?
People. I would say this. The money can be a motivator to pay attention more.
Sure.
Although the leagues I still play in with my college friends, us giving each other grief
tends
to be a pretty good motivator as well.
So with baseball, does your fantasy league end with the end of the regular season?
Yes.
Okay. And it's a much longer season. Well, kind of. More games than football, let's say. So does that take more time, do you think?
Basically, the difference between baseball and football is that with football, you essentially are checking and changing your rosters like once a week because games happen once a week. With baseball, you're having to do that every day.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference. Baseball is much more... I wouldn't say much more time intensive because it doesn't take that much time to check your roster every day, but you just have to remember to do it every day.
So I was going to ask you guys to estimate a weekly time commitment, like during a football, and then you have some overlap, right? I mean,
we're overlapping right now.
So, what kind of time commitment is somebody looking at if they want to like make an honest go of it?
If you at least want to be somewhat competitive, I would say it's couple hours a week, probably. If you want to be really, really good, it's probably more.
Because we're talking like serious people.
Yeah, if you're reading articles about it, you're seeing who you should pick up, who you should drop as players.
There's entire websites. ESPN has a whole section with their own people who are devoted to just telling you what players to pick and not to pick. And to be clear, I think we should point out that I think fantasy football is by far and away the biggest. And
I think it's
because it's a lot easier to do because you can just do it once a week. And it's only 16 weeks. Baseball, I tried to play fantasy baseball for the first time in forever this summer.
In a league with me, Steinbacher, and you just basically stopped paying attention
fell
after
off
a month.
The face
I think I have Chris Bryant, so I appreciate that shout out.
LOL. I have one last question about this. Are there other fantasy sports besides football and baseball?
Basketball, there is.
Okay.
I've played basketball a little bit in the NBA. I even have done a soccer league.
It's just not enough scoring in soccer or hockey to sort of make it work, I think.
Yeah, I think that's an issue. I've never done hockey. I have done basketball. I have done soccer even for like 1 year. But... with soccer, I didn't know enough to be any good at it, and the league just kind of fell apart after like a year and a half. But in basketball, I just kind of randomly did it with a random group of people. It wasn't a group of friends, and I did it for a year and just kind of lost interest in it because I don't follow the NBA closely enough to be very good at that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that ends my line of questioning. Thank you for participating in this 101 feature, which could become regular if there's something that I can Lisa explain to you about sports, guys. Anytime, I'm happy to do that. So, this was very helpful, actually. Thank you.
I should point out that I do play in a fantasy basketball Big Ten league, which my friend has to do all the figuring because I don't think you can do that for college athletics. And I enjoy doing it only because, and this is, I think, a big reason why some people play fantasy sports, is because I pay attention to a lot more Big Ten basketball games, which I enjoy doing. But it's a lot more interesting when, you know, there's something at stake when, you know, otherwise who's going to watch Rutgers versus Nebraska?
Nobody.
And with that, thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, folks, it's rivalry time, and Big John Steinbacher has the rivalry for us this week.
This is a sport that probably doesn't lend itself to fantasy, but it would be interesting. And I'm going to keep this brief because I don't really know a lot. I just kind of quickly researched this, but I thought we don't really go off. We haven't gone off sort of the bigger sports in a while, so I thought I'd bring up one. And I'm going to talk about the greatest bowling rivalry of all time.
Yeah. Oh.
Is Pete
excellent.
Weber in this?
No, Pete Weber, I think, sort of existed in and of his own time.
Okay. He's the one bowler I know, so I had to guess.
Sorry. So I'm going to talk about the two people I'm talking about, this is a rivalry throughout the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, between Earl Anthony and Mark Roth. Earl Anthony, considered by many to be the greatest bowler of all time, so sorry, Brian.
Okay, that's all right. I've heard the name Earl Anthony.
Earl Anthony had a crew cut, and they called him Square Earl. Because basically he looked like a math teacher out there, but had a very specific bowling style, was like the classic, you know, by the numbers kind of guy, one, you know, obviously a great bowler. And then comes along Mark Roth, a new style of bowling in the late 70s, just grip it and rip it kind of bowler, throw the heck out of the ball, and they had quite a rivalry. The two trade, they played player of the year titles throughout the late 70s. Earl took it from 74 to 76. Roth took it from 77 to 79. And Roth, and they both put up a staggering number of wins. And it says that now, you know, at the time, I think most people bowled like Earl Anthony. But not these days, more people are drawn to the power game of his aggressive no-holds-bar method for attacking the pins.
Yeah.
I have a comment about this. So it's bringing me back to... Well, just a few minutes ago when we were talking to our new friend Spencer Patton, talking about baseball and how the game should be played. So I'm wondering if Square Earl ever lectured his rival on how to bowl.
I don't know. That's a great question. There's definitely lots of footage of them playing one-on-one. I watched a little bit of it. He seems just like kind of do his own thing. Mark Roth is more flamboyant. I think I wouldn't be surprised if you've seen the movie Kingpin, if some of Bill Murray's character isn't just a little bit of Mark Roth. He's your classic, like, this guy who, you know, doesn't look like he's an athlete. He looks like he probably smokes a lot and, you know, has fun.
Mark Roth.
Yeah. But is great. And actually, Mark Roth famously is the first professional bowler on TV to pick up the 7-10 split.
Ooh.
And I watched footage of this. I'll have to pass it on to you, Lisa, to post.
Yes.
The crowd goes nuts because, you know, when he's about to roll the counters, like, looks like he's just going for one of the balls. Whoa!
Well, I remember when I was growing up, I think this was more in the winter where I can't remember what was on Sunday mornings.
Oh, yeah.
Like late Sunday mornings, but it would get to noon on Sunday, and I'm pretty sure it was ABC.
Yes.
It would go to the Pro Bowling Tour.
Right.
Yes.
So I remember, like, you know, when I was a kid watching just little bits here and there, but I didn't usually keep it on long enough. Like,
I think these two were definitely in that sort of golden era of bowling. Earl Anthony is the first bowler ever to have more than $1 million in career earnings, and I believe Mark Roth was second. Hmm. I think nowadays, obviously, earning $1 million is a lot easier, but they're both in the top five in terms of tournament wins and all kinds of great stuff. Very exciting rivalry when you look into it, and I think probably if I had the time to watch a lot of their matches one-on-one, it'd be fun.
I love this rivalry. I can't wait to go find some YouTubes.
Yes, Earl Anthony and Mark Roth. Thank you, John Steinbacher.
Thanks, John.
You're welcome.
All right, folks, it's time for another edition of Social Media Nonsense. Who wants to kick things off today?
First of all, we have to think of a better name for this segment.
We do?
I think we do. I mean, there's got to be some funny social media-related term or sports-related term that relates to social media. I'm going to think about that. And also, if you're listening and you have an idea, please tweet it at us or something. Just, I mean, it is nonsense, but I never intended for that to be the name. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. Yes, it's time. Should I just go right into mine?
Go right into it.
So there are a couple things, but in my ongoing series, now this is the second time in a row, so now it's a series of famous people who like our tweets. This week's famous person who liked our tweet is Mike Pesca, who used to cover sports for NPR and is now one of the hosts of The Gist on Slate, which is not a sports-related podcast necessarily, although there's some of that. But anyway, on his Twitter account, he posted a picture, a screenshot of ESPN Sunday Countdown as a triumph of man spreading. So it's like four guys and one woman. I don't know who these people are because I don't watch the ESPN Sunday Countdown. But it is true. They're all sitting around a table and the woman's like sitting, you know, with her feet crossed at the ankles or whatever. And these dudes, three or four dudes, are just like, for those of you at home, I am like sprawling in my chair.
Just lounging, yeah.
So it was really funny, and I said, I just said astute, like, yes, that's a good catch. And he wrote back to us at Bandwagon Podcast. I stopped watching when they started playing a video game as a stand-in for analysis, which I thought was great. And so I'll post a screenshot of that. Of course I have a screenshot of that. So that is one social media thing. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up is, and this is a bit of a follow-up to a segment that we did a month or two ago about esports. Mm-hmm. Our colleague Steve Mork, who is a producer here at WILL, posted something about how the 76ers acquired esports team Dignitas and Apex. Mm-hmm. So sports teams are he posted this on social media a couple days ago, and I was like, hey, we have a little bit of a prelude to this. So now you have professional sports teams acquiring these esports teams, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I'll definitely post a link to that. So those are my two contributions to this.
All right. I'll go next. We talked a little bit with Spencer Patton about the death of Jose Fernandez, the Miami Marlins pitcher, one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball, and played the game with a joy unmatched by very few others. And the Marlins paid tribute to him last night during their game. They did not play Sunday. They postponed their game because of Fernandez's death. But they played last night, and the whole game was a tribute to him. Everybody wore number 16 jerseys. That was Fernandez's number. And the very first batter for the Marlins in the bottom of the first inning was a second baseman named D. Gordon, who is not a power hitter. He had not hit any home runs at all this season. He steps up to the plate and cranks one into the right field bleachers. And he was a close friend of Fernandez. And came around the bases and got to the dugout and all kinds of emotion, as you would expect.
Go ahead. You can say everybody was, like, bawling their eyes out.
Oh, they were. Yeah. A lot of tears, a lot of smiles, though, with the tears.
Oh, yeah.
We'll share the link to that so you can watch the video. Just a very, very powerful, emotional moment in last night's Marlins-Mets game.
Yeah, that's
Go ahead, John. Follow that up.
Thanks a lot. Actually, we're in the middle of a pledge drive, and I'm the membership director, so I had to wake up early today to be on the air with our morning edition.
This
host,
is a long way of saying you don't have anything this week.
Well, I remember something during morning edition where Shankar Vedantam of The Hidden Brain said something about how people perceive things differently in slow motion, and I was going to look that up, but I can't find it. But anyway, he said he was talking about how you know, obviously in slow motion, you can see things you can't see otherwise, but your brain, even when you go back to regular speed, keeps that in line. So it's just an interesting thing to think about with sports where, you know, something happens in real time and then, you know, the NFL or Major League Baseball or whatever, you get to see it in slow motion. You're just like, how did you miss that? But once you've seen it in slow motion, I think, whatever.
It changes your perception.
It changes your perception.
Well, and there are varying degrees of slow motion. Yeah. Like when they started introducing the, like, super, super slow motion where you see every ripple of every muscle, it doesn't, I don't know. It just seems like you're seeing every frame.
And I have another one, I guess, now that I think about it. I noticed that friend of the show / better Tate than never host Travis Tate also had an interaction with, I don't think it was Mike Pesca, although he was in the tweet. He also had Stefan Fatsis, is that his name? Something like that. They're both hosts of the Slate Sports podcast. So anyway, that was interesting.
It's everything's coming up Mike Pesca around
I
here.
Should,
I should also... Maybe we should get him on the show.
Before we That'd go, I should say we're in the middle of a pledge drive, or well, by the time this is up, I don't know if you're listening. It's always a good time to go to willpledge.org.
I was going to get to that, and I will again, but anyway.
Yes.
So.
After John's very emotional pitch for your
makes
dollars.
Makes me want to just throw you all my dollars, dude.
Well, with that, I think that's a wrap.
All right. Thank you to everyone for joining us on today's, or this week's, I guess we're not even weekly, bandwagon. Of course, we're very grateful to our special guest, Spencer Patton of the Cubs. We love having guests, especially when they're like him. He was great. So
awesome.
Thank you so much, good sir, and good luck in your the rest of your career, I guess. Okay, the Bandwagon podcast is produced by John Steinbacher, Brian Moline, and me, Lisa Braltz. Thanks to other folks who have helped make the Bandwagon the force of nature that it is today. Scott Cameron, Jim Kelly, Mike Bowman, Taylor Judd, and as always, the band REM. You can find us on the web at will.illinois.edu/bandwagon. There you'll find links, show notes, video links, stuff that we've talked about. And you can also subscribe to this podcast and rate it in iTunes. And if you do that rating thing, it really does help people find us. So please do that. Follow us on Twitter at Bandwagon Podcast. Just leave out all the vowels when you're typing that in to get our most recent thoughts on sporty cultural things. And from there, you can follow Brian and John and me if you really want to. We do like your questions and comments and recommendations. As I always say, we are communicators and we like to communicate with you. And as a reminder, as John alluded to, Bandwagon is a long-running experiment, as it turns out. This is our 23rd episode, and we have the awesome distinction of really being the first true off-air product that WILL produces. This is kind of our sandbox, and we're having fun with it. If this is something that you think is cool, we would love to get a little vote of financial support from you. You can give at willpledge.org and just note in the comment box, like, bandwagon rocks, here's some dough. That would be awesome. So, and thank you. We're just happy you're listening, if you're listening, but in case you're feeling extra generous, you could throw a few bucks our way. That would be cool. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with a brand new episode, and thanks again for listening. Over and out.